You might have thought it would never happen, but Switchcast is endorsing a transport company. Whether you're moving a rare collectible, a high-end sports car, or your personal luxury vehicle, Shaughnessy Overland Express delivers with precision, privacy, and respect. This isn't just transport, it's white glove care from pickup to delivery. For over 14 years, they've earned the trust of collectors, enthusiasts, dealers, and owners by offering unmatched service and personalized attention. You'll work directly with their experienced in-house team, ensuring a smooth and private experience without middlemen or surprises. Every shipment is protected with up to $3 million in cargo insurance, offering peace of mind for even the most valuable and rare vehicles on the road. In addition to their enclosed fleet, they've also established a trusted auto transport brokerage service, giving you access to a nationwide network of vetted open and enclosed carriers. Whether you need transport on a route they don't currently operate or their carriers are at full capacity when your schedule demands, they'll still get it done without compromising the Shaughnessy standard of excellence. Same professionalism, same personal touch, expanded flexibility. We are proud at Switchcast to endorse Shaughnessy Overland Express as the official transporter of Switchcast. Visit soexinc.com and tell them Switchcast sent you. Welcome back to Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders.
Howdy.
Ethan Huffnagel, our problem solver and executive producer over here,
figuring out... I haven't solved anything yet.
Whatever. We are here, and it's recording, and people won't even know that anything happened behind the scenes, or didn't happen, or whatever. Switchcast is the podcast that's not just for car people. The automotive podcast is not just for car people, and it's also the podcast where we seek to edify, educate, and entertain in no particular order.
Ooh, I like it. That was a nice pause.
I should not drink sparkling water immediately before an episode. I was trying to emulate Tim Neely with his soft, silky voice where he'd kind of whisper into the mic mysteriously.
Someone did say on the on one of the YouTube videos we posted with him, like, could the guy whispering everything stop?
He has such a soft voice, and I think too he like doesn't get close enough to the mic. A lot of people seem to struggle with that though. That's Tim's a great dude. It's not like just his problem.
I think the mic picked him up fine, but he is just very breathy with his articulation of certain thoughts.
Breathy with his articulation.
It's a good
pretty
contrast
sure they're playing at House of Blues next month. I'd love to go see
breathy, What am I saying? Forget it. It was a good thing when the mic wasn't working.
Dude gets married like 2 months ago.
Let's turn it. Hey, keep it clean. Keep it clean. Turn the mic off again, doggone it. Man, get me out of here.
Oh, my goodness. If you enjoy this podcast, still, help us out with the algorithms. Like, subscribe, share, review. It all helps us out with that AI stuff, and it helps other people see the podcast at no cost to you. Please also support our sponsors and or sign up for Patreon at some cost to you.
But then you're like a sponsor almost.
Right. Patreon.com/switchcast, where you get to see all the behind the scenes technical difficulties. I know that you think that this just runs like a, you know, military ship.
I think tonight is our showcase as to why it does not.
Well, you know, when they hear the podcast, it's just smooth. It's like everything's magical, but
smooth,
not quite.
And smooth and breathy.
Let's take our warm-up lap before we go 10 tenths. Tyler, what is fueling this podcast? And I'm going to answer that.
I was going to load bearing for our sign here.
Our plate to sample sign from Ed.
Yeah, this is going to be some Michter's barrel strength rye that our technical advisor has brought.
I don't drink barrel strength anything, so I'm drinking some James B. Beam Distiller's Share Muscat Wine Finished Rye whiskey.
Oh, that's going to be sweet.
Aged 5 years in an American and French oak barrel. 105 proof. So that's at my upper limit of what it's
a spicy
like.
Meatball.
I shouldn't have read the proof. I should have tried to guess.
I can't believe you got this Bardstown just like bang
it's a
on.
Screw top. Shush. Mini bottle, too.
Wait, isn't a screw cap not fancy, Dan?
Cheapy. Boy, oh boy. I'm reading the notes from last week. I almost started off with Elaine Benes being part of the Ferrari. Oh, boy. We talked, I think it was Iowa, that passed a law a number of months ago to shield racetracks from neighbor complaints over noise, especially when the racetracks had been there before the neighbors were.
That is one. There's many, many frustrating things about this world. But I think the fact that people move next to a racetrack and be like, wow, it's noisy here. I hate it. We should tear it down is insane to me. Go live somewhere else. This was a known quantity.
You don't move next to an interstate and do that because you can't.
Yeah. Like, what? Oh, no, the consequences of your actions. Deal with it.
Right. So North Carolina also followed suit.
Yes.
No pun intended. Woo. And the General Assembly passed HB 926, a catch-all bill covering everything from wastewater treatment exemptions to how much whiskey a restaurant can keep on hand for cooking purposes.
The bill protects
racetracks. Well, I think if you don't have a liquor license, maybe. From nuisance claims, specifically in cases where the motorsports facility had legally established development rights and received all necessary permits and approvals to begin construction and operations.
A real quick producer's note, the next 12 or so minutes of this episode might sound a little bit weird. For some reason, there was a buzzing sound on both Tyler and Doug's mics when they would speak for a portion of the recording. So I had to run it through an AI audio enhancer. Shout out to Adobe to clean it up. The result, the audio is buzz-free, but it's a little bit muffled, so sorry about that. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the podcast.
So this is courtesy of AutoWeek.com. So we're very, very happy about this, especially as we're seeing kind of the opposite phenomenon happen where car culture is being ruined by a bunch of idiots trying to, I don't know, just act childish, both in their driving and in their antics, not in the car. Most notably recently in, was it the Slammed Enough car show in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, where they banned that car show from coming back. There was crazy racing on the back roads. There was just, you know, taking over parking lots, whatever, general semi rioting, but not really. And then just recently, another post in Anne Arundel County, the county police shut down the Cars and Coffee events and had nothing to do with the Cars and Coffee there. It was basically just a response to what had happened in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, with a Slammed Enough, and they had, the police have been instructed, as this post says, to shut down any gatherings of modified vehicles in all of the county, which they perceive as, quote, staging to street race or disrupt the surrounding areas. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, the old saying goes, take it to the racetrack. But then the Karens and the HOAs want to take the racetracks away from us. So it's really great that North Carolina and Iowa and some other states are actually protecting the racetracks. Now, obviously, some people still will do their shenanigans on the street. You know, it's semi-prohibitive, expensive, difficult, safety equipment, all that crap to go to the racetrack. And, you know, sometimes you just want to put your foot in it and do a little pull. You know, but anyway, it's one small step for mankind.
A sparkle, a glint of hope in a time that it's a bit unfortunate to be a car enthusiast. There's a lot of positive stuff we talk about. I think you and I and our friends still love being car enthusiasts, but the public, the shows and the stuff isn't what it used to be. And it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
I hate to see it.
I was on my way home from Tennessee, speaking of Tennessee, this weekend, and I had a detour off the highway. I was not down there for Slammed Enough or any
Or at least story does.
Music does. But anyway, I got routed off the highway because there was a car accident. And as I'm getting off the exit, what do I see but Craig and Landreth car? Yeah.
You didn't do, you, I, this wasn't on purpose?
No.
Oh.
No. Like Chick-fil-A, though, they are closed on Sunday. So I had to turn around like in their driveway anyway to get back on the highway on the ramp that I wanted to. Anyway, so I pulled in, I took a selfie and left.
Oh, but man, down there, if you want to buy a car on Sunday, you ain't got shit.
I didn't even
money.
Oh,
or Monday, I guess. So, yeah, with a contract and a deposit. Anyway, but I wanted to touch on that for a moment. Not to keep like beating this dead horse, right? We've made our videos. We've dragged their name through the mud for their action. Well,
they did.
We've just told the story.
Yeah.
Here's what they missed is dealer relationships are really, really important for dealers to have. A lot of dealers get arrogant and say, I don't need other dealers, whatever. We only sell retail. And this was absolutely the case during COVID, like 2020, mid 2020 to like early 23, maybe 22. Most dealers refused to sell to other dealers because it was so competitive. Nobody could get inventory. Even if you gave them the money they wanted, they were just like, nope, we are wholesale, not wholesaling.
Oh,
like how you, we still did if the number made sense because we knew that these relationships mattered in the long run and this market won't last forever and it will come back around to where we'll need them. But when we were trying to like buy a car for a client, it was just pointless. It was pointless to even ask, to put out the word, to send out our texts, emails, whatever, and try to find other dealers that might have a car that a client wants. It's just like, man, if we don't have it in inventory, we can't get it. But
that's crazy.
That's come back full circle and dealers need each other. And that was going to be my like plea to Joey Craig is when I called him up before the deal went totally south. I'd be like, hey, there could be a relationship here where you guys sell a lot of trucks. We sell a lot of sports cars. Like, let's start a dealer relationship because we could probably benefit each other. And he was too short-sighted to see that. And I was thinking about this because I was going through our numbers last month. We typically sell 75% of our cars retail, 25% wholesale. Now, the 25% quote unquote wholesale just means it's sold to somebody with a dealer license. Half of those are either dealers buying for a retail client or just a private collector with a dealer license. But, you know, still about 75-25. Last month, 49% of our sales were to dealers.
Oh.
But that wasn't because we were quote-unquote wholesaling or because we were in trouble or anything. It was our third most profitable month of 2025.
Oh.
Out of 9. So, like, it just goes to show that those relationships matter.
100%. Even in my line of work, the leadership at the company I'm at always goes for do right by the customer. We do a lot of contract work. You know, do for the sake of the relationship, you know, we'll take one on the chin if we have to for the long game for the customer. And it almost always pays off.
Right.
And but people appreciate it.
Yes. But
at least in my
customer, the customer should not be predefined as a retail customer. It could be someone else in the industry as long as the numbers make sense.
Yes.
You might do a web development job for another web development company.
Yep. And whoever the customer is, whoever we're doing the work for, it's for the relationship.
Yep.
Because they will usually come back. And that is so much better than more profit today.
Exactly.
Soul and Spine wants everyone to have a higher quality of life. They specialize in non-surgical options for those who have been told that they need injections or surgery. They offer state-of-the-art techniques that help over 90% of patients become pain-free in just weeks. Starting with thorough medical history and comprehensive examination, you'll work one-on-one with Dr. Hoover to meet all your treatment goals. Their mission is to unleash your body's own healing potential to avoid drugs and surgery. Visit SolonSpine.com to learn more, located in Solon, Ohio.
So, you recently sold your 996, not just because it was a 996, you know, or scoring IML, gray interior Friday.
Fried eggs.
All this.
Hold on. Duck. Gray interior, what? Doug? We're listing negative things. Gray interior is a pie. It's beautiful.
Anyway, you had that car for a lot of miles and a lot of years, but you sold it to get a GT3.
Yes.
But let's talk about that, because automotive media does quote unquote long-term tests, usually on new cars, and they have them for like a year. But we don't always get a real picture into what it costs to own the quote unquote cheapest 911 that you can buy. Is it really cheap, or is it like owning a real exotic car to own a cheap, unloved bastard child 996, 911.
The Stockholm syndrome really just took hold. I love 996s. So I did. I purchased my old 996 in 2017. I was newly out of college, had a job, and was like, I can have a car payment, but I don't want a daily. I want something I've been dreaming of since I was a kid. So that's when the relationship with my Lord and Savior Pentagon Federal Credit Union started. We're off to the races. So I bought that car in 2017 for $24,000.
Nice.
Somebody else's money. But, and because it was 2017, I paid like $800 for the privilege. It was great. Those days are behind us. And it had like 61,000 miles, and I bought it. It was completely Southern owned. I did everything right.
Sure.
Southern owned, car.
Fully serviced. Did it have the IMS bearing
IMS
upgrade?
Was done. I was ready to go.
Well, was it done? Did it have the IMS solution or the retrofit?
The retrofit, which
so
I was
wasn't
fine with.
Done.
Well, but this was 2017.
Every 5 years, option. You got to do it again.
Well, not anymore.
Anyway.
Not for me.
Yeah, it's my problem now. All right.
So I had that car for 8 years, and I put 47,000 miles on it in that amount of time.
And took some winter driving. It was kind of a daily driver for you.
Yes. So I had winter tires. I didn't drive it in salt, daily it in the salt, but I would take it out in the salt in the snow to go play around in a parking lot with you. So it did see some salt, but I took care of it, cleaned it off afterwards, whatever. So it, but I drove it in the cold as long as there wasn't, you know, the salt all over the road. So drove it all the time, took it on road trips. I dailied it to work in the summer. That I was in that more than my Volvo daily for many years during the summer. So in that time, I had spent, and I just calculated this from the service records that I handed over to you a couple days ago. In those 8 years, I spent $27,388 on service.
In 8 years?
In 8 years.
And 47,000 miles you put on it?
So that equals out to 58 cents a mile.
Just in maintenance. Yeah, that's how we do our on this show. We just calculate maintenance because gas is kind of an equal thing. Insurance is variable, not on the car. It's on, you know, how many cars you might have on your policy, how bad you are at driving, all those different things. And depreciation, we kind of, I don't know, it's just, it, you separate it out. So we just compare as a baseline, how much does it cost to fix these cars and keep them running based on use.
And the maintenance is usually the surprise. You're not surprised by insurance or gas, and an oil change you're not surprised by, but it's like, oh, I need to have my passenger door latch replaced because the window doesn't go up and down anymore. And that's $700.
Don't ever have to
part.
Do that on Maserati MC20. I
oh,
saw
that's
one
right.
where the whole gotta, rear of the yeah. car was Whew. Apart to get to the button.
Terrifying.
Yikes.
So,
yikes.
And I did a lot of the stuff I had to do. I put so many miles on it. Well, actually, it wasn't because of mileage. I had it for long enough that I had to do the IMS retrofit again. I had the RMS done at the same time. I put on the ultimate air oil separator, so I didn't have to deal with the AOS. You know, this is acronym hell, Doug. This is just, I lived in the forums and like what acronym is going to kill my car today. But I had a wonderful experience with this car. It cost me a lot of money. I calculated the 2025 maintenance costs. It cost me $6,700 this year, and it's only October.
Wow.
You're welcome.
10 years ago, when people asked me about buying a Ferrari and the maintenance costs, I was like, you need to budget like $2,500 a year for the engine in timing belt ones and like a 355 or Testarossa or one of those high maintenance ones, like 5 G's. But that's for like high maintenance Ferrari supercar level.
Granted,
that was pre-COVID numbers, but you bought the cheap 911 that is the entry level car that everybody wants to get into.
You need to be ready for some doozies. I will say the average per year was
$2,800,
which is still a lot of money.
That's it. I mean, that's the same. So let's compare mine. So I recently sold my 997 and I daily drove that. I drove it in the winter.
A lot
more
than
I put about 10,000 miles on it. And I had it, I think 3 years. And a 997 is allegedly better than a 996. It's certainly more desirable.
Yes, we'll say that.
But still can have IMS problems, still can have bore scoring issues, AOS, RMS, all the same issues. Let's see. In 2024, I put 6,700 miles on it. It cost me $3,800. So 57 cents a mile.
Sounds about right.
And in 2025, I only put 1983 miles on it because I sold it in August. $1,500 in maintenance. So it cost me 77 cents a mile. So right along the same numbers as you.
Well, and I think I do believe, and I don't have data for this. I've never owned a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, but those... The numbers can escalate much more quickly, I feel, with something like a Ferrari or Lamborghini. And I think a lot of that, like, obviously the mechanics are more expensive. The parts.
The random parts costs is what kills you on the Italian cars.
And with the Porsches, from what I've noticed, there's usually an option. So I did have to put this year a $700, I think, many, many hundreds of dollars door latch in the car. But from what I read... All of the other ones flaked out in another 3 years. So I was like, this one has lasted 22 years. We'll just put another one in and we won't have to worry about it for a long time. So you get to make those decisions. But for the most part, nothing that I did was crazy expensive. It was just stuff that needed done. I put 4 new shocks on the car this year, upgraded to Bilstein B6s because the old ones at 109,000 miles or 7 or whatever it was were just tired, leaking. And it's like, that kind of stuff adds up. Had to put a clutch in it. You know, that's expensive. I had to do that twice. Pressure plate broke. Kind of sucked.
Now I own it, and I don't have to do a thing.
It should be good, but who knows? You know, I did all new brakes this year.
Yeah, but when you bought it, it had been maintained well, too.
Yes.
But it's just, it is the ongoing cost of using a high-performance German car.
And I think I genuinely think it's worth it. You know, it's not like I'm just swimming in cash and this is nothing. Like, this maintenance is a lot. My 968 kind of killed me for a couple of years. I spent 18 grand on that car, or maybe 14 grand in like 2.5 years. That was excessive.
Yeah.
But it was like, and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. But it's kind of like I make that sacrifice with my finances while still being responsible and investing for my future appropriately. Because the car stuff is so important to me. But even with the cheapest car, it's going to cost stuff.
Should I add up how much, if you invested that maintenance cost and drove a Toyota Camry instead, what it would be worth when you're 60?
I mean, that would be great and all, but I don't think I'd care.
That's good.
Because this is not, I don't know how much longer I'm going to, you know, nothing is guaranteed.
Right. None of us may make it till 60.
Or, you know, something, maybe they...
Any of us may not make... I don't know. That was not a doomsday prediction.
But, you know, so anything can happen.
All of us.
And I want to responsibly enjoy a passion of mine that I've had since I was a kid. So this is a ton of money. I was kind of surprised that I crested over the purchase price of the car in maintenance.
Ooh.
But, you know, I also feel like at the end of it, I... have what I think is a great spec 996 that's been maintained very well and only needed a couple of annoying things.
You know, you can't say great without gray.
Aha, yeah. So hopefully the next owner of this car can enjoy it without much big stuff. coming up. I mean, I guess
you sound like you're trying to sell the car for us now. I mean, it's real
I want
good
it to go
pitch.
To a good home.
Yeah, it is funny though, right? So 996 is the cheap one. 997 is the better one. 968, 944, like the poor man's Porsches, the Boxster. But we've done, like, you've calculated out your 968. You kind of daily drove that car. You put a lot of miles on it, had it long enough to see how much it really cost. There is no cheap Porsche when it comes to maintenance.
It's
and
only
that's
a cheap,
why some of them are so cheap, is because a 987 Boxster, their entry level cheapo, this is saving the company, costs as much to maintain as your GT3 that you just bought.
Yes.
So if you can afford to buy the better one, just buy the better one. Because it's almost like the maintenance cost is just like, it's flat. It's the same across all of them when you extend it over enough period of time. Not a Carrera GT, but just about everything else.
And there's now, if a GT3 specific part goes, I'm going to be in for a world of hurt. And I know that going into this. But for the most part, I think you and John Sabo were joking.
But they don't go.
Yeah, that's true. It's like it's pretty fine. But you guys were joking that on a GT3 might be cheaper to maintain than my car as it is today, because it's just like, I don't know. There's
I bet
less
you
stuff.
It's going to be in 2 years when we have this conversation. I bet you they'll be cheaper than the 968 and the same cost as your 996.
And honestly, I'm okay with that. I think, and I didn't necessarily maintain this with an open checkbook, but when something needed done, I did it. And I did it with what I felt was the best part to put in there. I didn't go overboard and like, don't put a metal impeller water pump in your car. Don't do it. It'll score the block if it goes. But it's like, so certain things, I didn't just always go with the upgraded thing. I went with what was known to be a good replacement and mm-hmm. just understand service intervals. Like, this car never once left me stranded. It almost did in Tennessee once, because the coils were cracked. The plastic was cracked and it was wet.
Oh,
so it started misfiring on like half of my cylinders. And then I let it dry out and still drove it 8 hours home. Very stressful.
Put a towel in your engine bay.
Yeah, just. But I think, you know, when stuff makes a sound or starts going a little wonky, don't wait. Just get it fixed. Mm. So your car will repay you. And stuff, this still could have stranded me at some point. And that's just kind of what happens sometimes. But I think it was. The biggest lesson is replace with good parts and replace when either by time or when stuff just starts telling you that it's time.
Mm. Well, Tyler, you traded your car in, but some people choose to shrewdly negotiate their selves on Facebook Marketplace and try to sell their own cars. And in particular, this is a Porsche 997 for sale. Well, it's not. Oof. The title of the ad is Porsche 997S Audio Head Unit, also car for sale, $39K.
Wait, is it a $39,000 head unit with a free car?
No, the head unit is priced at $123,456.
Oh.
But the description reads, this is an original Porsche big screen audio GPS Navi multifunction head unit from my Porsche 997 03-12.
That's not how that works.
Nope. Sell also the car. Make offer. Everything works fine. Just changed today for a CarPlay unit. Pulled it today. Changed all rubber push buttons with new once C-lat picture. Also selling AC unit. What's underneath for extra $200? No pixel or any damage.
Don't.
So you could buy the car for $39,000. I don't know if everything works just fine on the car or on the head unit. But anyway, the car is a doozy, though. He is... identified this thing as a 99, it's an 05, I think, so it's a 997.1. He's identified it as a Carrera 4S GTS based on all the stuff. He's got the reflective strip across the back trunk, but it's red tape.
Yeah.
That is only on the 4S's. He's got the aftermarket LED taillights, and he's got GTS badge on the rear deck lid, on the calipers, on the bottom of the doors, on the steering wheel, which is done in red Alcantara, and it looks like they just like did it over.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like they just kind of, yeah.
It did this.
They didn't
inside,
actually replace it. So he's got about 8 different GTS badges on it, which it is not that.
And the paint, the calipers that have like GTS painted on, I guess is maybe a
it's
sticker.
It's a Tiptronic, too.
Always a tip. This over-modified BS.
Here's the best part. On the red strip across the back that's supposed to be a reflector that's only on the C4Ss, it has in script, Avalanche.
Why?
I don't understand. It's a GTS Avalanche. Maybe he thinks it's a, he's trying to convince people it's a Gambala modified one, because they did the Gambala Avalanche something or other.
That might be
check me on that while I Google
it. Got these
it.
Like AutoZone.
Yeah, it was like, the 930.
Okay.
Way back when. I don't think this guy knows what a 930 is.
This is wild. It's always the tip guys, man.
Every time
I see one of these, it's always a Tiptronic. That's just like way over modified, up badge to heck and back, and just very poor choices. And these LED taillights, get them out of here. Everybody puts them on these. I don't understand. They look like crap.
He's got red tape trim strip on the dash and around the
rings. Yeah, the rings around the gauges.
Oh, this is so bad.
This hurts my soul.
So bad. But if you want a 997 GTS Tip S 4S.1.2 cab with an aftermarket head unit, $39,000.
Next, pass.
Give me a bag.
The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jake Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield all-sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one on July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine, so get yours at sheffieldwatches.com and be sure to mention you found them on Switchcast.
I don't mean to revel when I hear news stories that companies are losing billions on their bets on EVs.
Oof.
But, you know, it makes me feel a little bit better about being so wrong about Carvana stock.
All right. We bring it up again. I got to go look, and now I got to be
sad.
It's
$355 a share.
Oh, my God. If I would
CarMax, however, is losing share value. It's Ethan said that it was one of the worst performing stocks of this year, down 46%
year to date, 46.25 as of like 5 o'clock today or whenever I looked.
Yeah. Whereas Carvana is up like 78% year to date, which doesn't make sense to me. Well, I don't know. I'm sure there's ways to explain it, but they're almost direct competitors. So the fact that two people in the same industry, in the same niche of the industry, can be so opposite, you know, unless CarMax is just running their business terribly, or Carvana's numbers are not accurate. Who knows? Anyway, GM loses $1.6 billion on EVs.
That is a staggering amount of money.
Staggering amount of money.
Oh.
And this coming from the CEO, who is still the CEO, Mary Barra, who back in 2017 made some statements saying we are basically all in on EVs and this is the future. She was committed. Here's her quote from 2017, thanks to NBC News. No more gas, no more diesel, no more carbon emissions.
Ooh, bold.
Yes. Another quote from an analyst at Morningstar says penetration has stalled.
Well, you never want to hear that, Doug.
Yeah. Well, GM is struggling with sluggish sales on EVs due in part to the Trump administration's elimination of the $7,500 tax credit for purchasers of EVs.
When I think the industry in general is struggling, I think the Trump administration's change, you know, obviously doesn't help anything, but the adoption rate has been slowing pretty significantly. And, you know, a lot of companies are looking at, you know, maybe the targets that have been set are not attainable.
Correct. Yep. We've covered Porsche losing a lot of money and rolling back on some of their plans. And Ford also lost about $1.5 billion in essentially canceled future EVs, you know, the cost of development and stuff like that, that then they said, eh, we're not ready, or, you know, we don't think that the demand is there. But the problem is, this doesn't just hurt the companies that make the bad bet. These are publicly traded companies. This hurts the shareholders. This hurts the average person who has a stake in this company. It hurts the employees.
Yeah, because, you know, are the jobs that people got hired for in developing some of this stuff still going to be relevant? Is it the same people that would develop an ICE vehicle as would develop an EV? Are they going to need to find new jobs now? It's like a lot of this stuff, it's a big shakeup that does affect, there's a ripple that affects a lot of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and just like, you know, their employee compensation, their stock packages, whatever, they're worth a lot less when the company is losing money.
Yes.
The company can't afford to hand out bonuses and give raises and stuff like, well, I guess they're union, so it doesn't matter. They just negotiate contracts. But regardless, the interesting thing is, though, so we've talked about EVs a lot, and the counter is that, or the counter argument is, oh, well, they're gaining market share. They're gaining market share. Record sales, record sales, record sales. And that's been true until now. Because you can only gain market share for so long, and when it's, in my opinion, artificially propped up by these massive buying incentives, the manufacturers are claiming that, oh, well, it's the Trump administration's fault. They changed their policy. They removed all these incentives. Okay, right. So they just made it a level playing field. I don't get $7,500 back when I go buy a used car. Nobody gets $7,500 back when they go buy a new internal combustion car. So if the EVs have to compete on the same level as everything else, let's see how they do. That's what I've been advocating for the whole time. It's not no EVs. It's just let's see how they do when they're put up against real competition.
And hopefully enforce you know, the innovation that can come from needing to be competitive in the market, you know, the positive aspects of the economic system that we live in, hopefully positive, that can drive to a better product that is better for the purchasers and then has the benefit of being better, potentially, hopefully better for the environment as well. I just think that.
Verdict's out on that one for me. I don't want to get into that argument.
Well, that's
right
why I say
now.
Potentially.
We're talking about
it's
numbers.
Like,
potentially, yes. Yeah, the overall footprint, not just the tailpipe emissions.
Yes.
The funny thing is, though, although EV sales globally are down slightly year-to-date from last year, September was a record 2.1 million sales. It was the first time global EV sales had ever eclipsed 2 million.
So what happened?
Well, it's because these credits are ending.
It's
like
yes.
The GM employee pricing back in 2008 or whenever it was.
Yeah,
everybody's going to run out and buy. They're going to break all sorts of records. And then the salesman better bank some money because they've just created a lot of rainy days. Because ain't nobody buying a car the month after the employee pricing for everybody ends, or cash for clunkers or whatever. So essentially everybody's running out to buy before these incentives expire. And then it is projected by the experts, not just me, that I'm not saying that I am an expert. I'm saying it's not just projected by me, the you know, guy with an opinion on the internet, but the real experts who have degrees and finance titles and stuff and get quoted in articles. they are saying that the sales are going to essentially fall off a cliff after September.
Which is, I mean, and it happened a little bit with the panic buying pre-tariff earlier this year. I have someone close to me that works in a, you know, main, like a pretty popular brands dealer, and things are so slow right now. And it's not just because, you know, there is, you know, maybe some struggle in the economy. It's like everybody bought cars like 3 or 4 months ago, whenever that was, when everybody was scared at the tariff increases. Mm-hmm. You used up all of the demand for a few months. You know, if you were thinking about buying a car later this year, well, just do it now before it's more expensive. And it takes a while for the market to recover from such a shock.
Correct.
Everybody's sleepy. They've already spent the money.
Correct. But GM and Ford are not the only ones that are reeling from this, not just Porsche. Tesla is also struggling. Their sales are down, especially their Cybertrucks. And I read an interesting, no surprise there. They're friggin' ugly and they're $100,000. This article from electric.co. Called out that hundreds of Tesla Cybertrucks have been spotted being delivered to Elon Musk's private companies, SpaceX and XAI. And they quote that it's because Tesla is having issues selling the electric pickup truck. They said after planning for production capacity of over 250,000 units per year, Tesla is currently selling the pickup truck at a rate of 20,000 units annually.
Oof.
Some number Rivian would be jealous of.
I know. Oh, God. I can't believe they're still selling that many.
Yeah. So they're basically saying, well, Elon Musk has this solution. He's going to have his private companies buy up hundreds, if not thousands, of Cybertrucks, as this article says. And I'm reading this going, okay, yeah, no surprise at all that Cybertrucks are selling or not selling. But it's not like some secret, you know, machinations for Elon Musk to sell his Cybertrucks to other of his companies to prop up his share price. That's just smart business. It's what was the Carnegie principle of horizontal integration,
vertical
integration. He did both. Okay. Thank you. Vertical integration. But why would you not do business with your own companies versus like, why would you buy a bunch of Chevy trucks when you can buy your own trucks?
For sure. I do think it's funny that this is happening when it's selling like hot garbo, which is, you know, cool. But I agree. You know, if you
also
need trucks,
makes sense to wait until the demand has waned.
Yeah. You know, you maybe they had other trucks that they weren't really aged out of service yet. I'll be interested to see how quickly these age out of service.
Well, they can service them because they are Tesla.
That's true.
So anyway, I with every news article, you got to understand the perspective, the bent, and there's two ways to look at things. And I thought that was interesting. Yes, Cybertrucks are failing, but why would you not do business with yourself versus giving money to another company? If you have the trucks, you sell them to your companies. Makes sense to me. It's good marketing too.
Yeah. See a bunch of your crappy Cybertrucks everywhere. You might find the like one or two people who haven't seen it yet and think it's good looking,
especially at a space company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, looks like something a space Martian would design if they were 7 years old and not very intelligent. This brings us to the props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy and sell cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing when available. Find more information online at switchcars.com or come visit our indoor showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, I think you know what the pick of the week is, or I swear to God, I quit. I'm out of here.
Tyler, why don't you tell us what the pick of the week is? Because you know more about it than I do.
Beautiful 2003 Porsche 911 Carrera in dark teal metallic over a graphite gray full leather with 109,000 miles on it, serviced to the nines. Couple of cosmetic bits and bobs here. It has 109,000 miles on it, but it has been fantastic for me for the last 8 years, and I hope it can be fantastic for one of you. And
thank you, Tyler.
Dark teal.
It is dark.
That's
teal.
Hot.
Pretty cool. And it's got the cool multi-spoke.
Oh, the yeah, the Sport Classic 2s that are a pain in the bum to clean, but they look so good.
They look so good. All right. our flop of the week, courtesy of rodentrack.com, Kia Telluride irony. A Kia Telluride gets a tourist driving one gets stuck on a trail near Telluride, Colorado.
Amazing. This looks so depressing too. Like it just kind of slipped off the road a little bit. It's like, oops. At least it didn't fall further. I guess that, you know, thankfully it didn't fall further, but it looks a little silly.
I think it's a rental too, because it said it's a South Carolina man and the plate is a Colorado plate. So this guy went to Colorado, rented a Telluride, and was like, I'm going to be an off-roader. But yeah, he went off a trail on Black Bear Pass. They said it's a trail that's best navigated on foot or with a dedicated nice. Off-road vehicle. And people had advised him to stay off the trail, but he did not heed their instructions. And it was closed for about a day while they extricated the Telluride from Telluride.
I like this down at the end of the article. Perhaps the driver should pay more attention to the fine print shown at the bottom of the screen on Kia Telluride commercials, particularly the part that says professional driver on a closed course, do not attempt.
Yeah, he ain't getting his security deposit back.
Nope.
Our prop of the week, Jay Roberts and Jake Dwinell set the roundabout record, or the rotary record if you're from New England, has nothing to do with vehicles that burn a lot of oil. This is 5 hours and 38 minutes, I think it was, continuously circling a roundabout, what? Which beat the previous record held by any NASCAR race. Yep. They literally drove in a roundabout continuously. There's rules to this, of course. There's a maximum of 1 minute stop for driver changes. They held their bladders the entire time. They did get accosted by police twice. Once they stopped in the middle of the roundabout, because if they left the roundabout, that would be, you know, it would be over. The other time, another person kind of distracted the cop and engaged them in conversation and said, here's what they're doing. It's for charity, whatever. And so the cop ended up just like watching the whole thing and laughing. Yeah, they live streamed the whole thing, which would have been interesting, but it, you know, they tried to have good conversation, but they just kept talking in circles.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, there's so much wrong with this whole thing, though. There really is. I mean, there's nothing right about it, unless you're in England. And then it's all right. God.
Ethan, pull the plug. Get us out of here. Get us out of...
You know, there's a saying that applies to NASCAR and also applies here. Four lefts don't make a right.
Yeah, I like the first one. He kept going with it, and I don't know.
Anyway, congratulations, we think, to them. It's a very obscure, random record, but they had fun. They raised some money, good money for a good charity, Brock Yates Memorial Fund, and I guess didn't get dizzy, which is amazing. I'd throw up after five laps.
I know, just like, oh. I mean, I got a lot faster going, but still.
12 miles an hour, I think, was their average speed for the whole thing.
Boy, howdy.
It really is incredible, but I mean, it has to be the most boring live stream of all time.
I know, it's like, yep, that car is still going around.
I don't think
it's
incredible. I think it's just a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. Like, you have the record for the most time in a roundabout. That's awesome, and the charity component is sweet. Like, that's fantastic, and we love Jay. With like, more power to him. But holy smokes, we were at that bonfire and I pulled up the live stream and it's just like guys in a car. Like that's it.
Well, and what made them stop? Because you would have been bored at like 15 minutes in. So it wasn't boredom. It was like you could have just gone forever.
Well, no, it has to be one tank of gas.
Oh, is that okay?
Yes. Which gotcha. Jay could do like 73 hours at that speed.
Yeah,
in his Prius with all his tanks.
Just guys in a car.
It's like a prop and flop at the same time.
If you actually tuned into that live stream and you stuck around for more than Doug, you and I maybe watched it for 15 seconds combined.
I don't even remember watching it. I thought it was a photo.
Would you, Tyler, do you have any interest in
driving in a circle for 5 hours?
Yeah, being in a roundabout.
No. Look, Doug and I were just on a road trip. I need to pee after like 30 minutes. I got the, my bladder's the size of an acorn.
How do you even know what the current record is? Like,
it was
how do you
4 hours something. There's a record for everything. I think this one is in the Guinness Book of Records because it's legal.
Right now, I hold the world record for longest, you know, podcast producer for Doug Tabbitt.
I think you've identified an issue.
Don't hold too tightly to that record.
Whoa. I think you've identified the problem with a lot of, well, not a problem anymore, but with a lot of the, sometimes I felt like the Cannonball Records had like one too many qualifiers. It's like the Corvette owner thing. It's like you drill down far enough. Of course, you're the only person to do this.
I think it's awesome and freaking hilarious at the same time.
And from the little bit I know of Jay, I love that he's the guy to do this.
Of course.
Like, that's amazing.
There would be no other person to do this other than Jay. I mean, the man is a madman.
he probably was just like, well, yeah, I could do that. Just did it. Love it.
He probably caught wind of this record. He's like, you know.
Mine.
From a friend of a friend of a friend. And he's like, yeah, I got that. I got that in the bag.
He's just perusing Guinness.
Yeah.
Just like, with a Guinness, you know, just... let's work on that one. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.